You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Want to join in on the conversation? Call or text 855-75-CIVIC. Now back to Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Civic Media Network. If you're in Appleton and Oshkosh listening on WISS or in Eau Claire listening on 93.5 The Tap, in Wisconsin Rapids on WFHR or Hayward on WBZH. Thank you so much for joining us today. We always appreciate it. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. So when should judges step away from a case? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Because that's a question in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. They're considering whether judges should be encouraged to step aside from cases when campaign donations or other factors could create the appearance of a conflict of interest. And we know it's still amazing to me that Supreme Court races in Wisconsin generate that kind of money coming into them, the interest, the fact that, you know, we have judges races all over the country, but man, we focus on the ones in Wisconsin with a lot of money and a lot of fury. The court voted 5-2 to create a committee that will study possible changes to judicial recusal rules and make recommendations. Any future changes could apply to Supreme Court justices as well as appellate, circuit, and municipal judges across the state. The proposal comes as spending in Wisconsin judicial elections continues to grow. More than $100 million was spent on the 2025 Supreme Court race, making it the most expensive judicial election in history. You remember Elon coming to town, throwing his money around. There was still a lot of money spent this year on the race, not nearly the same. But it makes sense.
Yep.
If the money's coming in, you got to recuse yourself. Because why, as a judge, why would you want to put yourself in a position to have your decisions questioned in appeal by appeal because somebody could prove, hey, you know, you got a lot of money from company X, and then they had a case in front of you and you ruled for them. Even if they deserve to win, even if the law backed up your decision, there's still going to be enough people to cast suspicion on this.
Well, especially in Wisconsin, right, where where there is always that fine line of people, because it is such a swing state, people trying to always have a say in what actually happens and thinking that, you know, there's always some sort of line of impropriety that's happening somewhere down the line, even when it's not, right? Like, we see this all the time. This goes further, to me, this is a good step in the right direction. If you want to keep a trust in the entire process. I mean, if I ever had my way in a perfect world, there would be no outside money being offered into these races whatsoever. I mean, to me, that's just the ultimate way to handle this. But hey, I don't live in a perfect world. So to me, this is at least a good first step to make sure that the decisions that are being made on the courts can't be scrutinized to a point where you could continually have those appeals. You could have people continually, you know, chiming in on news or making it seem like there was something that wasn't right when it was all done according to law.
There's one aspect to this that I have a question about in my own mind. Besides the money, which makes money is a pretty clear line where you can go, okay, there's no money. It's also, they're debating whether a judge's public statements, campaign positions, or comments on controversial issues should factor into the decision on whether they should recuse themselves. Now, if you're a sitting judge and you make some bold comment like that, that could look bad. But if I don't know I'm a judge, and you know with the internet, people go back, they'll dig something up from a long time ago. That shouldn't come into it. Because what I said 10 years ago before I was on the bench should have no bearing to what I do on the bench.
Right.
Because one, I wasn't on the job. Two, people's opinions change. And three, if I've gotten to this point, it shows I can separate personal feelings from legal feelings. And that's or legal facts. And that's the key there. Can you separate? It's easier to separate, I think, from something you said a while ago or a statement you made on a personal belief or a political belief than it is if you're beholden to somebody for money.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't agree with that second part. I agree with the first part. If you've gotten money from somebody, you got to recuse yourself.
I think, and here's the thing about this argument, and I kind of understand the thinking. If it was something that happened, you know, way long ago in the past, that's really, really hard to counter that, right? Because obviously, mm-hmm. as you said, you don't know you're ever going to be a sitting judge. You don't know where the future is going to go. However, the one thing that I would argue on that is I kind of understand where they're coming from, because one of the things that has really bothered me ever since I've been in the state of Wisconsin is the fact that our Supreme Court justices just willy-nilly make take sides when it comes to elections, and they publicly endorse other judges to sit on the court. And I'm like, no, I don't believe that that is proper. I, as somebody who is a voter, who obviously would love to see the most fair elections possible, I also don't believe that's the right way to go about doing it. So if we're eliminating things like that, right, where we're eliminating the fact that they can't endorse, and if past comments are past comments, you're not going to be able to take those back. I understand that. Then somebody needs to do their due diligence during the election process and find those comments out about that particular person, right?
Right.
But the fact that there is this air of partiality on our Supreme Court in this state really should bother more people, I think. And that's not saying that I'm not going to ever say this candidate is better than another. You have to look at it at face value, because no matter how you vote, people get upset when justices mm-hmm. do that. And I think that is one place where we could use better ethics on our Supreme Court in the state of Wisconsin.
I agree with that part. You don't, once you're in that job, you become apolitical, or you should.
Mm-hmm.
You should be apolitical. And then you keep your opinions to yourself.
Yeah.
You have your, you know, I know, yes, we all have free speech. Yes, we have a right to make opinions. But we also have, most of us, I mean, I know we can't make statements on social media and stuff that would, you know,
no.
We have very strict guidelines. That's why we have to say all of our opinions are our own, and we have to mm-hmm. make sure we're covered. And if you're a Supreme Court justice or a judge at any level, you should be beyond all
yeah.
that.
You're supposed
save
to,
it for a glass of wine with your friends in your house over a dinner party.
You're supposed
and then
to be
rail
making
about
your decisions
you
based on the state constitution if you're part of the Wisconsin Supreme
right.
Court, or depending on what court you're at in general, right? You're supposed to be making the decisions.
It's the law.
Yes. That's
and
what you're
the law
making
doesn't make sense, and people have hard enough time understanding
yes.
some of the rulings, because it doesn't
right.
make common sense, but it's the law. And we don't need to muddy the waters. And your point about, I've never understood how the court races are so, so partisan. It's like, wait,
it's
the law isn't partisan.
No, and that's just it. The law should be very bipartisan. And when you sit down, to me, if you're serving as a Supreme Court justice, your job is then to hear those cases, then to sit down with the other justices in the room. And I understand, based on their viewpoints, whether they're more conservative, whether they're more liberal leaning, they're going to make decisions based on those values as well, while still using the law as the backdrop, right? That's how we want our mm-hmm. justices to rule. You have to be able to work with the other justices, because that's why there's bipartisanship, because you have to interpret the law that's best for all people, not just based on what you think. And that's why it really bothers me. And I'll be honest, I haven't really heard the Republican justices really do as much endorsement as the more liberal-leaning justices on the Supreme
right.
Court. So I find
right.
that fascinating when this the more conservative justices do get attacked for that, because their statements aren't quite as public as I've heard the liberal-leaning justices in this state.
Well, according to legal organizations, they're saying, listen, this could lead to broader and more practical challenges, like campaign spending coming through PACs or outside groups that do not disclose individuals. Either way, I mean, that's a justification. Well, and we've heard that justification a few times just as we're moving to the primaries.
Sure.
Through the primaries. It's, oh, well, I didn't know exactly where the money came from. Mm. It was from my PAC. I think money's money. And at some point you're going to go, okay. And there's enough, there's got to be a way to find out. Either we get rid of PACs so that there's no way to hide who's giving the money, or there has to be some disclosure, because I get it. I get the, well, we, at some point it's a legit defense. I don't know who gives to the PAC.
Right. And that's the problem.
But you also know your PAC, the way it leans, and who has, you know, who would be likely to support it. And you can make an educated guess if you are a justice. But there, we have to figure that out first. So it all goes back to campaign finance reform, which we're not going to get because money.
Yeah. Well, and that's just it. I mean, both parties don't want to lose the PAC money. I mean, they really don't. It's what propels both parties in elections and gives them maybe a higher lift in their particular election. And I mean, that's just it. There are candidates out there who are like, yes, I only take small dollar amounts, and kudos to you if that makes it if you're able to do that. But that doesn't mean there aren't PACs that have been developed in your favor who then give you an increase in notoriety and commercial spending or whatever it might be. So you can tell me all you want that you're only taking those small dollar amounts because you probably are yourself and your campaign, but that doesn't mean that there's not outside groups who are still trying to buy influence on your behalf. Yeah, so
you're not buying that many TV ads and radio ads with $4 contributions.
No, and you know what? And I don't fault a candidate, because in this current political cycle that we are in, that's what they have to do. They have to be able to have the spending in order to get their name recognized. You also have to really have a really great platform. So, you know, there's that portion of it too, but that's a whole different topic for a conversation. But I don't fault any of them for that, because that's how the rules are currently set up for them. But it does bother me that there is, as we've talked on this show at nauseam, probably at this point, we need better rules. We need better rules for what happens with that PAC money.
Well, and you'll, if you're wondering, do we have rules now? Yes, these rules that the judges have now, recusal standards, were set in 2010. The court had a conservative majority then. The rules have remained controversial as spending in the races has gotten better. They're not going to make any changes right now. The committee is going to study the issue and then potentially recommend revisions at a later date. So this is all theoretical conversation right now. But hopefully somewhere down the road, some changes come.
And it was retired judges who have already served that proposed these changes about public concern. So it's not anybody who's currently sitting. It was actually retired justices who were like, you know, after what we've seen and kind of been through, we probably need some things to change. But I mean,
then why didn't you try to change it when you were there?
Well, and I'm wondering if maybe it's just gotten so out of balance over the years, because you never seen the type of money, even 5 years ago, you didn't see that type of money going into judicial races or school board races like you do now.
No, last year was the peak. And even this year, when everybody said, well, there's not as much money, as we mentioned, there was plenty of money. It wasn't like this year's Supreme Court race was, you know, done just knocking on doors and getting $5 here and there. Well, the weather is looking a little dicey this week, so when we come back, we'll talk to Sevier Studios meteorologist Mace Michaels to get you updated on what's coming. I'm Brian Noonan. This is Daybreak.
I'm Jamie Martinson. You are listening to the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
It's 8:22 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. If you want to get involved in the show, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. It's looking like a very active weather week here in Wisconsin and across the Midwest, actually. So to get a better look at what's happening, Sevier Studios meteorologist Mace Michaels joins us again. Mace, thanks for being here. Appreciate it as always. So am I wrong to say that this week is looking a little dicey for everybody? What's causing it? Where is this coming from? What's the deal?
It's going to be a very summery week, even in the rain that has been falling. If there's one thing I noticed right away, and this is weather nerds, when you step outside, you notice it right away. This is a warm rain.
Yeah.
This is tropical rain. This isn't that cold rain we had 3-4 weeks ago. So the weather pattern has just totally changed. And these type of rains can just wring out a lot of moisture. So have to watch out for flood worries today. Heat we look into tomorrow, and then maybe severe storms on Wednesday.
All right, so let's break this down a little bit. Let's start with the heat and the humidity, because that's going to be part of the ongoing story this week. And then we're going to see cooler temperatures. So as a meteorologist and somebody who watches weather, we're going to need somebody to break that warm and humid weather to get the cooler temperatures. So what can we expect today? I mean, we've seen some rain and thunderstorms across the area already. Is this expected for much of today to continue and then across the rest of the state, or are we more isolated today?
Yeah, everything coming today is flowing up from the south. So the humidity building, the heat building, and these are the type of thunderstorms you may be in a period that they last for half hour, 45 minutes, but when they rain, they will just be soakers. So we will have some pretty significant rainfall totals in a short amount of time. With some of the storms yesterday in Iowa, Illinois, they were just wringing out 1 inch in, you know, in a half hour. These are big time rainfall producers. So they don't last long, but when they're coming down, they will really be cranking. Today, it's still on the warm side, so we're in the warm and humid flow. The cooler air won't arrive until Wednesday system, and that's when we could have a round of severe weather, or a couple of rounds of severe weather.
Mace Michaels is our guest, the Severe Studios meteorologist. Let's talk a little bit about Wednesday. It's an alert day, so what does that mean technically, and then what should we be alert for?
Sure. It's right now so far a level 3 out of 5 risk from the Storm Prediction Center, an enhanced risk. Last I looked, that is just the way their grading scale goes from marginal all the way up to high. So enhanced is the in-between one there at level 3. It's leaning a little more initially into the western half of the state. But all modes of severe weather possible. There's a strong low coming in, so there'll be plenty of a twist in the atmosphere. So tornadoes definitely a concern. And then large hail and the type of environment we're in won't be an issue. These will have some strong updrafts. And then a wind risk is there as well. So all modes of severe weather possible, let alone we just talked about the flooding concerns.
Are there going to be specific portions of the state that you're more concerned about than others, or is this going to be kind of a statewide with all of the conditions? Anybody is kind of eligible for this weather.
It's leaning a little more west, it looks like, at least through for Wednesday. Now today, just about everybody, especially the southern half of the state, has the biggest concerns today for the heaviest rainfall, but everybody's going to see today's showers and storms, and you won't be able to escape the heat coming for tomorrow. Wednesday, probably a higher risk of severe weather, or at least to see more severe storms. It'll be in the western half of the state, but I still think that risk is out there for everyone. Maybe the far north having the least chance, just the way the low is going to track, but with the way it will move through, it'll be in the western part of the state.
All right, I have what's going to seem like a very dumb question to you, Mace, and to Jamie, but it interests me. You brought up the difference between the cold rain and the warm rain. Now, I'm thinking, just from the little I know about the weather, that's because of where the front is coming from. Is it that, or is it seasonal, or is it just luck of the draw? I know it's not luck of the draw, but what causes the rain today to be warm and, you know, some rain to be cold?
Sure.
It's basic weather 101. I'm sorry.
The main front. No. It's all this southerly flow coming up ahead of the main storm system. So it's warm temperatures coming up in all levels of the atmosphere and up a cloud level. It's not as cold as it was even a month ago. It's warmed considerably. So that's where the difference is coming from. It bringing in the warm air.
For anybody who might have outdoor plans this week, are we talking more daytime events, more evening events? Where I know it's really hard to pinpoint, but when could people expect maybe the crux of some of these storms later this week?
Today, pretty much all day. We've already, seen our share. So today, it's a good risk right on into tonight. Tomorrow, again, not as many storms around. Wednesday, there could be a wave or two in the morning, but the bigger concerns for severe weather will be in the afternoon and on into the evening hours. Just the way the low is moving in, it'll approach eastern Minnesota in the late afternoon. Things will fire along that low in the later part of the afternoon and continue on into the evening hours, it looks like.
All right. Well, Mace, thanks as always for joining us. We will talk to you again and, we'll keep our eyes on the skies and see what's up. And next time, I'll have another dumb first level weatherman question for you. But we appreciate you being here. Thanks, Mace.
Thank you so much, Mace.
One bit, and that wasn't dumb at all. No.
Have a wonderful day.
Take care.
Raining right now very heavily in downtown Madison. So thank you, Mace. So obviously, Mace, talking about how we were going to see a lot of these showers throughout the day. Yes, we're seeing them right now in portions of Wisconsin.
And I will stand by my question. I know I'm not the only person who hears that and goes, well, why?
So, no.
That's my job. My job is to ask those questions so you don't have to. I'll take the heat. it's coming up at 8:30 when we come back. There is so much more and a topic that I didn't think we would ever have to talk about in Wisconsin, but we do. I'm Brian Noonan. This is Daybreak.
I'm Jamie Martinson. Thank you for joining us today on the Civic Media Network.
Now back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Civic Media Network. It's 8:35 right now. And a quick reminder that even if you qualified in our Accelerate Your Summer Multi-State Text Win Contest last hour, don't forget, you're going to have more opportunities to qualify throughout all of today and again throughout this entire week. We are talking cash prizes, we are talking prize packages, and then of course the grand prize, which is $250 in cash for groceries and $250 in gas. And you got to qualify, so use your Civic Media app. And more chances coming up at 9 o'clock this morning.
Very good. This is something I never thought I would have to discuss. I'm shocked by this. Sometimes you find a story and you're like, how is this still happening in Wisconsin? This is one of those stories. So first a question, what do you think is the ideal age to get married? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Spoiler alert, this story does not talk about the ideal age at all. You may not have heard this, but last month, Oklahoma became just the 17th state to ban child marriage. That's the practice of allowing minors, typically 16 and 7-year-olds, to marry with parental consent. Now, most states that have banned child marriage to date are led by Democrats. Wisconsin, where Republicans control the legislature, has not. So, yes, in case you didn't know this, child marriage is still legal in Wisconsin. And I'm not saying this just because it's a salacious headline, though it is. It should be shocking to other people. It's really shocking to me. So in Wisconsin, here's the deal. 16 and 17-year-olds can still be married with written permission submitted to a county clerk along with a standard marriage license. Between 2015 and 2024, 297 minors were married in Wisconsin. That's according to the Legislative Reference Bureau. These teenagers, notably, can be married not just to other minors, but also to adults. State law provides an exception to its rules on statutory rape. Sexual relations between an adult and a teenager are not a crime as long as they are married. Now, you may be wondering, where are the Republicans on this? Because this has come up, and this is going to shock you, this has come up a number of times. Rules have come up in front of the assembly, and they have never once been brought to the floor. Because according to Republicans, they say that if we pass these rules, it infringes on parental rights. That's legit. That's what they say. JB, you've lived in Wisconsin and been in Wisconsin. I've been in Wisconsin for a long time. I didn't know this was a thing. And I guess, why would you?
Right. Yeah.
But shocking.
This is one of those laws that feels like it should have been. It's so antiquated, right, that it feels like this is something you that think should have been taken care of 20 years ago, 30 years ago, if not longer. But it's 2026, just in case anybody needs to, you know, a refresher on what year it actually is. Yes. Now, I guess it's encouraging, question mark, that some of our Democratic legislators are actually trying to, you know, end child marriage in Wisconsin. We've got Representative Rowe and Senator Mark Spreitzer, who have basically been working on this for over a year.
Yeah, Spreitzer's been going on for a few years trying to get this passed,
enough,
and Roe has now joined him.
Interestingly enough, it dies in committee. Like, it gets to committee and it just dies in committee. Why? Why is this a
debate? Parental rights. It's parental rights. You should be able to marry off your kid. You know?
Wow.
And in now it's changed a number of times in Wisconsin, but the point is you still if you have parental consent, a minor can still marry an adult. Now, I know there's going to be some people who are going to go, well, what if she's 17 and he's 18? He's technically all right. Yes, technically.
Right.
Okay. Still, 17 and 18, I know there's people who've gotten married then at that mm-hmm. age. I'm going to go on record as saying that's way too young to be married. I think two people under 18 is way too young to be married. And I think a 16-year-old girl marrying a 35-year-old man is criminal, mm-hmm. unethical, and icky.
There's a reason why teenagers aren't given certain rights until they get older, right? I mean, there really are, because our brains are not done developing.
Yes.
I'm 47 and my brain in some fashions feels like it's not done developing some days, right?
People get mad. I say teenagers are dumb. And that's, we were all dumb. You're supposed
dumb.
To be dumb when you're a teenager.
Yes.
That's part of being a teenager.
I think the thing that bothers me most about this, too, for multiple reasons, but this is a law that goes back to 1849. 1849, when obviously the world was a lot different than it is now.
Just a little.
It set the, in 1849, the state statute set the minimum marital age for males at 18 and 15 for females. Now, males under the age of 21 and girls under the age of 18 still had to have parental consent. So really, we haven't learned a lot or changed a lot since 1849.
Nope.
By 1959, the minimum age for females was raised to 16. The law was amended then again in 1971 to allow men 18 or older to marry without parental consent, and girls under 18, but at least 16 to marry with parental consent. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's archaic, right? These are archaic laws. And in the 1970s, in the 1950s, in the 1800s, there was a reason that these rules existed. Perhaps culture was a lot different. People did marry a lot younger, right? They really did.
Yes. Well, that, you know, when you were in the 1800s,
right?
When you were working farms and it was industrial and rural,
yes.
And that was, you know, and people's life expectancies were much, much lower. So, yes.
But is there a reason Republicans in Wisconsin don't want to change this rule? Doesn't this also go along with what Republicans in Washington, D.C. would like to see for this world, where it's a very lots of kids, where there's one working a parent in the household, usually the dad. A man and a woman married. Wives, man and a woman married, multiple kids. The mom stays home. There's no education involved. Isn't this along the same type of thinking, though? A law, again, from 1849, mm-hmm. that we're seeing coming from the GOP in Washington, D.C., as far as what a traditional family should look like.
Well, yeah, we talked about how some states are rebranding Pride Month. And the weird thing is, up until 2020, this was kind of, Wisconsin had bipartisan support for this. And then after 2020, the Republicans in private, they will say, yes, we support this change, but they won't bring it to committee. They won't vote on it. They just keep quashing it. And so that seems strange. You know, why wouldn't you want this? What is there? I don't buy for a second the parental rights thing.
No.
I don't buy it.
I don't.
And here's just some startling facts to back all this up, besides our outrage. So advocates say there are a lot of consequences for girls that are married off as children. They describe possible trajectory. Teenage girls, when they marry older men, they're denied normal social activities. They're cut off from education and career opportunities. Studies have linked child marriage in girls to poor mental health outcomes, diminished educational opportunity, higher rates of poverty. Because once you're trapped in that system of being a child bride and you have a couple kids, what are you going to do if that guy tires of you and you're done, or you finally break free of that? You have no education. You have no life skills because you were married off at 14, 15.
You've probably dropped out of school, so your education is low enough that getting any sort of job beyond the minimum wage, and by the way, Wisconsin still won't raise that either, is going to be a problem. It's going to be problematic. You know, and that's just it, too. It's about the economic impact of it for especially these girls who get married at a really young age. But the mental health of this is, I mean, that's a whole other concern, because there's studies, a study after study has actually linked child marriage to higher rates of depression, anxiety, social isolationism, and emotional stress. And a lot of young people who marry really young often lose opportunities because they don't get to participate in those normal kid activities. They don't get to have the same sort of friendships. Even if it's a toxic friendship, you have to have the experience of being able to get yourself in and out of those friendships, right? And dealing with those types of people and experiences that are just overall a normal part of growing up and being a teenager or an adolescent, whatever term you want to throw at it. This is the fact, too, that the GOP will sit there and tell Senator Spreitzer and Representative Roe that they don't agree with this law and they should end child marriage, but not actually pass it through committee and put it onto a floor vote, tells you about the cowardice within the Republican Party, not just at the state level, but all the way up to the national level.
And I'm gonna call this out. During the last session, the bill, the child marriage bills sat in committees that Senator Chris Capenga of Delafield and State Rep Patrick Snyder of Weston, they died in committee, as Jamie said earlier. But those are the two representatives who head the committees. And those are the guys who kept it for what? Why? I would love to hear from them why. What was it? Are they trying to tie it to something else and they can't, and so they just kill it? What's the justification? And I'd like, you know, maybe there's somebody out listening who is like, well, Brian, we could see this being, you know, a good thing. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Because as with a lot of things lately, I am flummoxed by why this has not moved forward. It doesn't make sense. It seems it potentially, you know, if you want to go to the far extremes, it could be used for trafficking. You don't.
Yeah.
And it's not always, you know, the high school senior and the college freshman who have to get married because originally when the laws first started, it was guys were allowed to get married underage if they had, so that their child wouldn't be born out of wedlock. So if you know, well, you know how that happens. I don't have to paint the picture. Listen, you're out in the horse barn, and all of a sudden you're feeling Randy in the haystacks. And then, you know, 9 months later, and
did Brian just give me the birds and the bees?
Yeah, he did.
I did, Parker.
Wow.
You learned everything here on Daybreak.
Parker, I'm here to mentor you in all areas.
That's why I'm good.
Here.
I mean, here's the thing, too. There's so many things that are going through my head right now, because there's also the legal protections with all of this. marriage creates an exception to statutory rape laws, right?
Yep.
Meaning an adult, the minor, then could legally have sexual relationships if they're married. And they're obviously married. That is going to be one reason why child welfare advocates argue that this deserves a lot of scrutiny and probably the law needs to be changed. That there's practical concerns as well. Marriage is a legally binding contract. There's finances, healthcare, housing, potentially children all involved. I mean, there are so many reasons why the law needs to be changed. And I'm sorry, if you're a Republican and you won't pass this out of your committee, it's cowardice. It's sheer cowardice.
Stand
what
up.
What are you afraid of?
Once again, it's we like the kids till they're born. Then we let them do whatever they want. Whatever happens to them, hey, you're on your own, kids. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to get rid of influencers altogether because I've had just about enough of them. This is Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson. It is 8:49 right now on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Fairly solid, better than expected. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:52 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Glad you're here. Are you tired of influencers? Have you had just about enough? I know I have. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I know. Here, Parker, get ready. This is an
ready.
old man rant here. We got to get
clowns,
rid of influencers.
You're going to get yelled at.
I don't like it. Who are they influencing? You know who? The weak-minded. Weak-minded people don't need anybody else to influence them. Their influence should come from wise people. People who have deep thoughts, who can educate us, not from some Yahoo eating a McNugget on a Cedar Point roller coaster. Or some, hey guys, I just went and had an Eggs Benedict for brunch. Hey guys, look at me. No. I know I sound like Saddam Hussein from South Park, but that's the thing. All right, well, a YouTube influencer has been banned for life from Cedar Point and all other Six Flags owned park. Good. He was filming himself eating McDonald's chicken nuggets while riding the Millennium Force roller coaster. His name, I'm not giving it to it because I don't want to give him any more publicity because that's what his life is all about.
Look at me. I'm eating nuggets on a roller coaster despite rules that say I can't bring any loose objects.
Anyway, he was eating he snuck on a 10-piece nugget box, which is not a euphemism, onto the ride, and then he ate 7 nuggets while traveling at speeds approaching 93 miles an hour. And where was the goose that hit Fabio in the face when this guy was chowing down? I would have, oh my God, if that goose had wedged, kind of like when they're making the goose liver pate. I wish the goose had jammed that nugget so far down his throat that he wouldn't have been able to get it. This is, I know people think it's funny. Oh, isn't that cute? And then his buddy during one part of the video
is
holding sauce so he can dip it.
No.
Now, it's all fun and games.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it, Parker? You're laughing. Oh, yeah.
I think it's
Brian,
funny.
It's so funny.
It's hilarious.
So funny.
This video
till the Yahoo
happy.
Drops a nugget and it flies to the seat behind and blinds your kid because he decides he's got to bring some nuggets.
93 miles per hour.
Yes. You're dropping 310 feet at 93 miles an hour.
Yeah.
You know what damage a nugget can do at 93 miles an hour? Not enough because this guy survived the ride. But the point is, Six Flags has rules against these things. You can't bring loose stuff onto the rides. They tell you, you've all been on a roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
And if you haven't, I'm sorry you never got to leave the house. But they don't want loose items. They don't want
right.
your purses, your take your hat off.
It's all
take
safety.
Take your glasses off.
It's safety. All safety. That's what
but
it
not
is.
Now,
because,
Jamie.
Because these little loose items become projectiles or choking hazards. Because that's the other thing.
We could only hope.
The other thing about this is this influencer could have choked. He literally could have choked on
if
his
there
nugget.
Were any justice in the world. I don't wish bad on anybody.
No.
But this time I'd go, listen, you get what you deserve, you nut.
At this point, park officials are reportedly considering filing charges against him. They have, though, issued, until they make that decision, they've issued a lifetime ban from all Six Flags properties. Now, of course, the video, because he's an influencer, quickly went viral and it gained a lot of national attention. Influencer. He later said that he never expected eating chicken nuggets on a roller coaster to become some sort of major news story. And at one point during the ride, the influencer asked the person filming for the dipping sauce. And the one incident, as you rightly pointed out, Brian, was the dipping sauce. But there was one incident in the video is that when the dipping sauce basically flies all over them.
Yeah, all over. Hey, imbecile, you're opening up a liquid going 93 miles an hour. Have you ever tried to spit out the window of a moving car? It's coming right back in your face. I know physics is probably hard because influencers don't usually break down any sort of physics unless it's Neil deGrasse Tyson. Then he'll go into some astrophysics for you.
There's more,
but that's boring. We want to talk about an alien.
There's more to this, though, because the ride's official photo even captured the influencer eating a nugget during the ride. So
Please calling him an influencer. Stop. Who is he influencing? If you are influenced
Parker,
by him,
he's influencing Parker. Parker thinks
then
it's
Parker
hilarious.
Needs to be put down. Brian, I know. If he is really influencing you, Parker, you need to. Frank, Parker's got to go. I'm sorry.
I'm not going to do it. I'm not dumb enough to do it, but it's funny.
The other part of this is that Cedar Point, as part of the Six Flags rules, also restricts on-ride video recording. So cameras, including GoPros and any handheld devices, are actually prohibited on rides unless, you know, you have exclusive park approval, which they did not.
It didn't happen if it's not on the gram, Jamie, so I got to do it. I got to break those rules. Give me a chicken nugget. Next time I'm going to do a shamrock shake as I'm going on the Tilt-A-Whirl. It's going to be fantastic. I'm going to influence everybody. Every simpleton in America is going to try to eat Big Mac while it's going on that floppy boat that goes back and forth so fast.
Here's the thing that bothers me. When did we become a society where we were cool with this as our entertainment? Like, that's a legit question I have. Because whenever
I don't know. We talked about Skibidi before, which is a show about talking toilets. Can we trace it back to that?
Maybe.
Or was it before?
What happened
was it
to
Beavis
us?
And Butthead?
We've devolved. We're devolving rapidly.
We are devolving. We are in an idiocracy. And Nugget Boy is, you know, he is now ruling the world. Oh, I'm surprised it went viral. Surprised, but not unhappy, are you?
No.
That was your whole goal.
No, because then they monetize on it, right? They get the monetary benefits of it.
And who knows? Maybe he placed one of those bets on one of those prop bets on whether somebody would ride a roller coaster and eat McNuggets. And so now he made money that way, too. The whole world is just upside down.
Well, now you
and
know what
Parker is buying into it, and I can't be a party to that.
Brian,
I can't
really
have somebody
funny.
On the show
it's
who
so
is a
funny.
Proponent of dumb.
It's so funny, Brian. We should do it
with a B at the end.
All right, we'll go to the fair, but I know you don't leave town, so it's hard to have adventures when you don't leave town. All right, I'm done. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Jamie, you can stay if you want. It's Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martin. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is the Civic Media Network. Stephanie Miller is next.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.